Hello, friends. My name is Norman Lake. I'm an inspirational speaker, and my friend Duncan Trussell has given me the honor of sharing my story with you on his podcast for this episode. What a wonderful honor this is. The very fact that I am holding a microphone attests to the miraculous nature of the universe and the remarkable power of the human mind to overcome any obstacle lobbed its way by the greasy and bedraggled demons of fate that lurk in the little corners of our lives, waiting for us to stumble so that they can fall on us like rats in the slums of Calcutta upon an unfortunate house cat that has fallen into a pit of rats. It was only 4 months ago that I had a chronic addiction to Oxycontin, morphine, crystal meth, and alcohol. I was also addicted to prostitutes. It was only 4 months ago that I was spending my wife's money to fly out to Thailand, where I would arrange for rendezvous with 5 to 9 Thai prostitutes. I would have them dress me in the clothes of a Boy Scout or sometimes as a sheep herder. And I would force them to do foul things to my body, to suffocate me with their loins, to vomit into my chest and back, to wrap me in duct tape, until all that was left was my mouth, and to use my mouth as a kind of latrine until I had to be resuscitated. And when I finally came to, their combined urine and excrement would come spraying out of my mouth hole like some kind of satanic geyser at a national park made for demons. And then I would have them punch me senseless until I was black and blue, covered in sores, and in such agony that the only thing that could make the pain go away was hearty injections of morphine and Oxycontin. And this cycle would go on like that for months. But 4 months ago, I came to my senses. I was laying in a bed made of soiled diapers and dead rats on glue traps, embroiled in my own perversion and sickness, when I realized that my body was composed of stardust and that all human life has been forged in the nuclear forge of alien stars. And as stardust that had woken up, I was doing a disservice to the universe by allowing myself to spend hours and hours at a time rolling underneath the thighs, breasts, mouths, and anuses of prostitutes. I came to my senses, and if I came to my senses, so can you. I've nearly kicked the oxys, and I've limited the prostitutes to holidays and weekends. Go easy on yourself is what I'm trying to say. Use my story as inspiration.
Wow, thank you so much. That was Norman Lake, everybody, with an amazing sermon and a beautiful message. What a wonderful man. What an articulate, wonderful man. The Duncan Trussell Family Hour is brought to you by Sure Design T-Shirts. Sure Design T-shirts can be found at suredesignt-shirts.com. What a delightful T-shirt company this is. Every week I get emails, messages, and Carrier Pigeon once even carried a note to me from an island off the coast of Tahiti, where a man managed to have Sure Design T-shirts parachuted down to him. And he said that he was actually considering trying to escape from the island until he got his Sure Design T-shirts. And he realized that it was the uncomfortable clothes he had been wearing that was ruining this island that he was at. How many of you are having a shitty life because your T-shirts suck? You've got to ask yourself that. Does my life suck because I'm a festering asshole? Does my life suck because I can't let go? Does my life suck because I'm too fixated on my career? Does my life suck because I'm greedy? Does my life suck because I'm living in fear mechanisms? Does my life suck because I can't forgive my mom? Does my life suck because I can't forgive my dad? Does my life suck because I have my expectations are set way too high for anything to ever please me? Or does my life suck because I'm wearing bad cotton? 99% of the time, the problem's the T-shirt. The problem's because the shirt that you're wearing is uncomfortable, and that's the thing that's causing your relationships to fall apart. That's the thing that's causing you to be addicted to drugs. That's the thing that's causing you to be an abusive lover. That's the thing that's causing you to be unable to stop looking at porn. That's the thing that's making you take 7-hour naps and sleep for 12 hours a night. That's the thing that's making your breath smell like somebody filled it with the cremated remains of a elephant's anus. That's the thing that's making your hair fall out. That's the thing that's making you get old. That's the thing that's making you have a disease. That's the thing that makes you transient and impermanent. That's the thing that makes you unable to ever complete anything worthwhile. It's the shirts. So if you want to change that, go to suredesigntshirts.com. These folks make some of the coolest designs and the softest shirts known to man. They're so fucking soft. They're so very soft that three different countries have attempted to make them illegal. They actually, next month, are apparently blasting two of these T-shirts together at the CERN particle accelerator. The theory being that if they send these two shirts slamming together at almost the speed of light, it will create a talking, huggable panda bear. And so Disney's really interested in that, and I am too. I hope it works, and I believe it will. So go to suredesigntshirts.com and order one of these shirts. And friends, why not go to duncantrussell.com? And join the forum at duncantrussell.com. It's a great forum. A lot of interesting conversations are happening there. You can also go to Duncan. If you want to support this podcast and you enjoy this podcast, you think the podcast is funny, if the podcast brings some happiness to your life and you want to contribute to the podcast, here are some ways that you can do it. We now have an Amazon portal. So if you want to, if you're going to buy anything on Amazon, and I've heard that a lot of people are buying stuff on Amazon these days, then you can go to duncantrussell.com. The portal is right there. Click on the portal and then buy the books, the flat screens, the washing machines, the car, whatever the thing is you're buying, and we get some small percentage of that. So that's a way you can contribute to the podcast. Also, we're sponsored by audible.com, and if you go to audibletrial.com/familyhour, and sign up for a trial membership, we get $15 for every time somebody does that, which is pretty awesome. And you get a free audiobook. And there's a lot of amazing audiobooks there, so go check that out. We get $15. If you want to be super hardcore, you can just donate by going to duncantrussell.com, click on the donate button. If you want to support the podcast, you can do that. Send some green energy our way, and thank you so much. For whatever reason, this month, a bunch of people donated. Thank you all. And when you donate, please make sure that you leave your address so that we can send you a thank you note. So do that. And the other obvious way you could support the podcast is by buying some stickers, some T-shirts, a poster. All these things are available at duncantrussell.com in the shop. Check it out. I think we might be sold out of a bunch of shirts, but we've got a new order coming in, but it's worth checking out anyway. Just buy some stickers. It's like $5 for $5. Or buy, there's autographed posters there that you can get. So that is another way you can support the podcast. But if you don't feel like doing any of that, just listening to the thing is support enough. And I really am flattered and honored that you let me put this thing inside your brain. You're a real sweetie, whoever you are, and I hope to meet you one day. Today's guest on the Duncan Trussell Family Hour is one of my favorite comics out there right now. She's just brilliantly funny and has this authentic, unique, crazy, sexy, hilarious persona. I have no doubt. She's already had massive amounts of success out here, and I have a feeling that pretty soon she's going to like turn into like, she's going to get like Galifianakis style big. It's just a matter of time. But she was cool enough to come over. Galifianakis big as in like in movies. I'm not talking like physically. But she has the, it's really cool that she took the time to come here. So everybody, please send your love tendrils and love vibrations to my friend, Chelsea Peretti. Chelsea Peretti, welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour. We're here with Chelsea Peretti. Can you talk about?
I had a midday espresso. Espresso.
You got guts, girl.
Why? Because everyone's going to hate me from that sound?
No, people love that sound on this podcast.
Oh my God, let me get my gum out, guys. I'm sorry. You can I apologize. That starts us off on the wrong foot. I'm sorry.
So you're, what's going on with this nerve.com thing I keep hearing about?
Oh, I am hot under the collar. Honestly, this is bad though, because I do think you're just publicizing people that no one cares about if you talk about it in this way.
You know? Nerve.com? Never even
you're,
heard.
You're doing an ad right now for people.
Nerve.com. Check them out. It's a web. They got a one word website.
What That's, is it? Isn't it a dating website?
Never heard of it.
I don't know what they do.
Never heard of it in
but
my entire life.
But they've come out with a list of the sexiest women in comedy. I want my comedy fucking sexy. Yeah. Oh, sexy comedy. It's just like burlesque. Yeah. Everyone's favorite art form.
Yeah. I love it.
Didn't make the list, if you can't tell.
That is a travesty.
It does suck, though, when you get enraged about something, and then it's like, well, you're just bitter. It's like, yes, I am, but at the same time, come on. Nerve, they have 14,000 followers. I was going to go attack them, and then I was like, oh.
You have like 500.
I have 8 zillion followers. I control the universe.
Yeah.
I have 8 zillion followers. Wait, do you know how many people on Twitter have 200,000 and up who you've never heard of in your life?
I don't like to think about that.
This is the thing. Andy Warhol was right. everyone is going to be famous for 15 minutes. In fact, everyone's going to have their own podcast, their own Twitter, their own web series, their own website, their own TV show. Like, pretty much, it wasn't that what Truman Show was?
Well, yeah. I think what will happen where everything truly falls apart is there is going to be a point where they're able to scan the human brain into a computer and run energy through it, and that brain like gains consciousness.
This is kind of like the recent Bourne movie.
Oh, really?
With Jeremy Renner. I mean,
I didn't see it.
You know, you're taking pills.
Spoiler alert.
Well, not really. That's just the premise. Like, they take these pills that modify human behavior in the brain.
Yes. Right. Well, that's like where it's going to, but it's going to get even worse because they're going to. Well, or worse or better, I don't know. But they're basically, the idea is there's going to be simulators filled with virtual people who all have the same consciousness that you have, but you're going to be able to modulate those people.
I swear to God, if that gets to be the case, I think I would have finally have the courage to commit suicide.
You won't be able to. You won't be able to commit suicide anymore.
Why?
Well, because they're going to... That's the problem is, like, first of all, you won't want to because technology is going to be so advanced that they're going to have ways to re-equalize your brain to make you no longer uncomfortable in the world.
This is making me so crazy, everything you're saying.
There's a science fiction writer named Robert Heinlein.
Forget that name.
I can't remember that.
Everyone could forget that name.
But the idea is they quadruple the human lifespan in the future, and something that you have to do every like 200 years of your life is go into this weird pod that sort of recharges you so that you no longer want to die, because after you've lived for like 200 years you're so ready to eat a bullet that like you can't make sense of wanting to live, so they kind of have to like shove you in one of these pods I love life again.
This is like Stepford Wives.
Yeah.
This is horrible. I hate it so much. Like, as you know, I'm really like, just, I came in hot today. Came in hot. And lately I feel like I need to like get my spiritual life together because I am like crazed to be raged.
I love
That's
it.
Not
I
mean, even
I...
like real words, but I'm so cracked out on coffee right now. And like, I feel like when you're talking like this, it makes me feel how philosophy used to, like, I took a philosophy course in high school, and it makes me crazy to have to think too abstractly about how things are going to be or could be or are.
Sometimes I wonder if it's some form of defense mechanism to contemplate those things, kind of like thinking about, you know, you like thinking about unicorns or something. I mean, is there that much of a difference?
It's a fine line. Like, I loved 28 Days Later, for example, a movie where you're like imagining the future and what would it be like if things had different values and blah, blah, blah. But when it gets really abstracted, like humans' brains and jars and feelings are this, I'm like, oh, I can't. And I also just really would figure out a way to kill myself if there's any possibility of that.
You would kill yourself?
I don't want to live in that world. It's too foreign.
Stop there. So wait, you would kill yourself in that world of 28 Days Later. How would you do it?
I don't know. It's so unfathomable. In some ways, like, even though I feel like I'm like so like, I don't know what I am, but sometimes I feel like I'm conservative where I'm like, I just want what I already know.
Right.
You know?
Well, first, let me just disrupt your suicide theory, by the way.
Yeah.
Because that is a bastion of hope that people cling to without really analyzing the state of consciousness in the universe. And it's like everyone thinks that's your escape hatch.
Right.
I don't think it's an escape hatch.
Oh, God. You're going to make me crazy.
Yeah. I don't think you've got an escape hatch, dude. I think that the way when you commit suicide or when you die in general, there's like two, you know.
You think you believe in purgatory?
Not fucking purgatory. Even,
hell.
Even worse than hell.
No. You become Ryan Seacrest?
Yes.
JK. Hey, Ryan, if you're listening, JK, I know he's one of your number one listeners.
He's a huge fan.
And a huge fan.
No, I think what happens is there's no break. I think that you die and then you wake up and you're like a butcher in some butcher shop in New York, or you're a nun, or you're a flight attendant, and you have this mild deja vu where you're like, ugh, what was that? And you just perpetually exist with
this
no break.
Making me
your
so
consciousness
crazy.
Just hops in between body to body like
honestly,
a radio signal.
Duncan, honestly, I am overwhelmed by my current life. That's already unmanageable. Please stop tacking extra lifespans.
Well, I'm just trying to knock out of your
I cannot
idea
open
of
my
solution
mail.
Suicide.
I know. Okay, let me just throw this out there. I am obviously joking. I would never kill myself. I don't believe suicide is funny. I know that it hurts
people. I think
people.
About suicide all the time. I think it's funny, and there are times where I've seriously contemplated. I don't think that that's an unhealthy thing to do.
I don't want suicide, but I do, like, I think that's why drugs are so appealing, is the idea of just blotting out your brain, you know?
Right.
And I, you know, because I don't do that, and I would like to have some secret into, and that's why I like action movies, like anything in sports now. It's like, I like things where I can just latch onto something else and forget about.
Video games for me. Video games do that for me. Oh, the big numb down. There's nothing like it when you finally hit that state of placid nothingness.
Yes.
Oh, what a relief. Where it feels like
But it's too hard to play video games. That's why you're being very active. Like a movie or sports, you're pretty passive.
You can really, well, it's all the same. It's all the same narcotic. I mean, it's all the same end result, which is like when you've been thinking a lot and you're running on high, it's like your brain is a suburban neighborhood right after a tornado hits and there's all these
Everyone's
power lines flicking around, and people are doing that too. But it's just all this activity. It's like power lines flickering around with like
zzzz. Why is it suburban?
God, I don't know. That's just to me how I picture my brain.
See, now some you're showing suburban your real colors, your upbringing. When it really comes down to it, that's where you see yourself in the suburbs.
I don't know.
That's
maybe.
That's your bias.
You think I see myself in the suburbs? Hold on, I got to think about that for a second, because I'll admit it if it's true. You know, I have, like, there was a time when I went to the suburbs with somebody, and we were in a deep suburban neighborhood, and in Michigan, and I felt it, man. I felt the fucking thing.
Suburbs have a spiritual energy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't know if I call it spiritual.
When you hear like crickets at night and like you see lit windows and stuff, there's something in there that it's just like going into a mall, you know, that like a nice mall where you're just like, nothing's ever gonna change.
Yes.
It's all gonna be okay.
Oh yeah, it's the best. It's this like pulsation of life. It's this
Or seeing presents under a Christmas tree that are wrapped before you know what's in them. Looking at that, you're like, oh, everything's gonna be great.
Yeah. I love it. I love that feeling. And I, you know, I've just been like trying to write about when all that got disrupted for me. Like the last time I was really in a suburban neighborhood was 1982, pre-divorce. The summer before my parents...
You're divorced?
My parents divorced. I got divorced in 82. I was 8. I was in an arranged marriage, but it still hurts.
I could see you being in like one of those like Rushmore type intense young relationships.
Oh no, I did not get one of those. Oh God, I wish I did. I was like,
we braided our hair together, and that's symbolic.
No, I had crushes, but it never worked out. I never got in one of those. I've seen those. Those seem appealing, but 82.
I love young love.
Young love's the ultimate, like ultimate pure love, because you're totally not aware of like.
Yeah.
How things tend to go.
You think you're immortal. You think the love will last forever.
Yes.
And it's like that puppy love where you're just so excited and you don't even think about incompatibility yet.
At all.
It's just like, oh my God, and this person likes me back.
After you figure out I have sex, it's the best fucking sex ever. Like it's young body sex. Like young.
You're in your prime.
Your sweat still smells good.
Your booty holes are perfect.
Perfect assholes. Kids are fucking each other in asshole all over America. Did you know that?
No, you don't have to fuck each other in it. You just know it on some core.
No, I've heard
that
these kids are fucking each other's assholes all over high schools.
Are you
all
joking?
No, it's like first base.
Where'd you read that? In Assholes Weekly?
No, I read it in like one of those adult housewife things where they try to make it seem like they're giving information, but really they're just writing scintillating
dirty
erotica
stuff.
But they're trying to make it seem like a disaster.
Well, kids can just watch porn now, so they're just like probably so immune to anything.
I mean, that's the that's crazy. Like I can't imagine what these kids are doing out there.
Oh, I bet you can't. I bet you can, Dunk.
Well, anyway, my experience with the suburbs was in Florida when I was living with my Aunt Isabel. I still remember the movies we went to that summer. Annie.
Oh.
Poltergeist.
Ooh.
And E.T. all came out in the summer of 1982. That was pre-divorce for me. I was
1982, that is?
82. Hmm. Yeah, but anyway, I remember that sense of, like, incredible, like, softness to the world when you're living in this kind of stable mm-hmm. thing. It's stability. That's yeah. all. It's stability. We don't have stable lives.
When did you move to a more urban location?
Well, it's not the urban location. It's like, when does your mind state get shattered and you realize that you're living in a turbulent universe where you can't cling to anything and everything's inevitably going to fall apart?
But I realized that since I was one.
See, I didn't. I had a good 8 fucking years of living in fantasy land, for sure. Flitting around.
What happened when you were 8? When did you stop flitting around?
My parents got fucking divorced.
Isn't it crazy, like, that divorce... Like, when you really think about it, when people tell these stories where they're like, you know, I was in a gang or, like, child prostitution sure. and all this shit. And it's like, I'm like, where does my angst come from? Divorce? Like,
yes.
My parents were kind of annoying. Oh, they divorced.
Did your parents get divorced?
Yeah, when I was one.
Yeah, see that? No, you don't. Everyone wants the fucking, your mind. I mean, everyone I've talked to wants to make it seem like their angst is less than other people's angst. Like, they're always like, well, my mom wasn't a prostitute. My mom didn't get mouth fucked by Crips
for the first 10 years. That's definitely more angst. You can quantify that.
No, I don't think it's quantifiable, because I think the mind always, like, tries to make sense of whatever's happening in this right. sad, pathetic way, so that your mind will always try to, like, make it seem like what's happening is not quite so bad. So I don't really
right,
think there's that.
On a very simple level, like, say your dad beat your mom, right?
Yeah.
You're more likely to then beat your child. So you can say, like, if you're a girl and you're looking to date someone, you could quantify, because you're like, this guy's more likely statistically to beat me than the guy whose parents are just divorced.
Right. Okay. Here's the thing. I think that, okay.
But I know what you're saying. That
sure. Okay.
The
so
feelings-
when, so I'm sitting next to an Israeli 38-year-old who, when he was a child... at the age of 8, was sitting at a cafe, and there was a bright flash of light, and then his grandmother's head was in his lap from a suicide bomber.
Oh,
and that person could say to me, "Wah, your parents got divorced. That
right.
really upset you." So,
right.
and yes, I think that guy's going to have PTSD and stuff, but we've both experienced in different levels of extremity the basic fundamental principle, which is that the universe is in things, everything's impermanent and nothing lasts. And once you get that in your life, whether it comes from a simple, nice, easy divorce with sweet parents who just couldn't work it out, or whether it comes from the shattering of your existence through a plane accident or some tragedy, it's still the same truth.
Yeah. I mean, I get the gist of what you're saying, but it's just the scale. I mean, obviously, yes, it's an endless and pointless exercise to compare gripes, you know, or to compare tragedies, because they're all just, you know, tragedies, and one being different than the other doesn't make any real
But I think people try to compare the tragedies, or like I've done that, or people, and I've noticed it's a tendency. I think people try to do it because if you manage to minimize your tragedy, then you won't be as compelled to really spend time working on it, you know.
But haven't you ever been having a really bad day and you just feel a gloom and doom and darkness? And then, you know, I had this the other day. I was feeling really kind of self-pitying and sad about something, and just like had a couple blue days.
Yeah.
You know, even if intellectually I can go, you know what, my life's pretty good, you know,
yeah.
but just that day, the logic was not overpowering the feelings.
Yeah.
And then I like drove by a guy who was in a wheelchair. He had a nurse with him and some other person
sure.
with him. And I was like, look at this. You're not like that. You have a great life. And I'm using him. And then I was like kind of laughing to myself in the car, thinking like, someone's definitely pointed to me at some point and been, at least I'm not her. And I was thinking, it's probably like if I was bombing on stage some night and some like lady who's smiling at me condescendingly as I bomb is just
right.
like, thank God I'm not this wretched beast.
Yes.
So there is a whole continuum of it, but it's like, you know.
Yeah, it's like a fractal. It's this it's this hierarchical fractal where you can find in any piece of it something that you either feel sorry for or wish that it was you. And it's just this tendency to try to escape from what's happening to you right now by trying to look to other things.
Well, that's all I want to do all the time.
To escape.
Yeah.
From what?
You know, I just feel like I always want to be a different person than I am. And I always like look at other people and go, oh, like I wish I was that person. I wish I was that person.
Yes.
And I always just wish that I felt like, honestly, the stats of who I am or what I'm doing are all fine. It's the feelings.
Beyond fine. You're one of the funniest fucking people on earth.
Thanks.
And super respected by, like, you fucking Gary goddamn Shandling tweets at you, like, once every 2 days.
It's unclear why. But
because you're super funny and everybody knows. I said this about Pete Holmes. I'll say it about you. When Pete Holmes,
you're super annoying. That's not
you hear
cool.
That, Holmes? No, I knew it when Holmes came in here. I made a Nostradamus style prophecy, and I said, Pete Holmes right now is being pulled back on a slingshot. Actually, I said boomerang because I fucked the thing up.
Yeah.
But I was like, I can feel it. Same thing with you. So you're teetering on the edge of some kind of crazy fucking thing happening. I can sense it. I can feel it. I don't know what it is, but I can feel it. So it's a curious thing. But I understand. I mean, it doesn't matter where you're at. I guarantee that there's people who are in the fucking Illuminati. There's children of the Illuminati
right. Who
sleep in golden beds and have dripped into their mouths.
Is this a real thing?
Stem cells and lotion.
That sounds horrible.
Okay, that doesn't sound good.
You're like, ew, stop dripping stem cells in my mouth.
The point is, no matter where you fucking land in this dimension, you're always going to have this sense of dis-ease
but
with where you're at.
Some people don't. Some people don't. And it's like every time I try to read these books about people who have positive. And honestly, like, you know, I bought this book that Phyllis Diller supposedly recommended to everyone all
what
the
book?
Time. The Power of Believing. Have you read it?
No.
So I've started reading it, and it reminds me very much of The Secret and very much of The Power of Now. And
yes.
It's all very much like, just think good thoughts. It's like, well, guess what?
Yeah.
I don't know how to do that. That's
right.
Why I bought your stupid fucking book.
Right.
If I could just think good thoughts, I would have done that before I spent the money.
Well, girl, let me tell you something.
Anyway, I'll muscle through it.
You got to go to Agape in Culver City on Sundays.
What the hell is that?
It's the
Please say it's a good restaurant.
It's a steakhouse.
Oh,
it's a great steakhouse. No, it's this amazing.
Oh, I really thought you were serious.
No, it's this amazing. It's an amazing church. It's a little cheesy, but it is brilliant. And the guy who I've been going there for years. Actually, I just went this last Sunday. I hadn't been in like 3 years, but I went this last Sunday because I've been.
What's the denomination?
In the doldrum. What?
Non-denominational.
Yeah, it's non-denominational. You know, they got pictures of like Gandhi and the Sri Yantra and like metaphysical stuff, but it's the same stuff you're talking about, which they have a name for it, which is called, I think it's called New Thought is the name of it.
Uh-oh.
No, it's not a cult. It's not a cult. It is cheesy.
It's not a cult.
No, but what he said, which I really liked what he said this last Sunday.
Chelsea Peretti has left the building.
Get in the building again, Peretti. Come on.
No, I'm headed to Agape.
Everyone's in a fucking cult. I mean, if you go to any kind of like life improving anything, it's got cult
qualities. I know. That's the problem. I don't want to do any of those things.
But he says good info that you can then apply to your life. Like one thing he said, which I really loved, is a Zen quote, which is like, just because the birds fly around your head doesn't mean you have to let them make nests in your hair. And that's like this thing where your mind goes crazy with like all these like worries and thoughts and stuff like that. You're never going to get away from that. That's always going to be happening. You're always going to have the static in your mind, but you don't have to connect or attach.
That's actually a direct quote of Jesus Christ.
No, it ain't.
No,
I wish it was. That would be incredible. So anyway, the point is,
I take it back. What is it?
No,
Jesus.
I don't.
All I do is regret. Like when I make a joke about suicide or Jesus, all I do is imagine like someone like saying like, that's not cool. That's hurtful to my people. I'm like,
shit,
you know,
who cares about them? I mean, the thing is, it's like what it seems like a lot of your comedy and a huge part of your art is coming from this turbulence, right? Like
right,
this is the
right.
source of so much of it, right?
Yeah.
Like do you think that if you equalized or reached some kind of like
yes
equilibrium, yes what?
That I wouldn't be as funny or
you
interesting.
You think you wouldn't be as funny?
Well, of course that's a fear, but also like when I've talked to comedians who have more positive thinking, you know?
Yes.
I just think like I can't organically be that necessarily. And then I just feel like, oh, well, I should just organically be whatever I am.
Organically be what?
Well, turbulent, I guess. Like, if I just feel like what works for, you know, someone who's just geared towards positive thinking might not be the same thing that works for me.
Like, let me ask you this.
Isn't the world work because, like, there's some comedians... I think of the world in terms of comedians only.
It's your industry.
But doesn't comedy work because there's different voices and it's not everyone applying the same technique and having the same outlook?
Yeah, totally. But it's a matter of, like, you know, like I used to, I used to compare Marc Maron to Ralphie May because...
because it's just funny to do that?
No, because some of Ralphie May's or any, like, big bodied comedian, a lot of their jokes sometimes is related to their physical appearance.
Right.
Actually, I haven't listened to Ralphie in a while. I know a lot of his jokes aren't necessarily that, but some are.
But it's funny because if you do it at all, then people are just like, yeah, yeah, that's what they do.
It's your comedic persona. It's part of, like, what you wear. It's who you are. It's like the way Louis C.K. wears, like, black shirts and jeans.
Right.
It's kind of like part of the package, right? And Marc Maron, part of his package is he's, like, neurotic. That's kind of his thing. He's, like, kind of the neurotic guy that you want to fix and you want to help, and it's, there's something really cool in that. And Louis C.K. too, it's this kind of neurosis which allows you to, like, connect to it, or you feel like, fuck, that guy's that freaked out. Well, I'm not as freaked out as that, or
anyway, it's cathartic.
So you think, like, well, shit, man, you know, it sucks being in a big body that you've kind of made part of your act, because that's dangerous to be in a big body. Like, you can be in poor health because of that. In the same way, like, if you're, like, super neurotic.
I know, dude. I've thought about this so much. Trust me. Like, when I was even first starting in New York, I would look at the generation of comedians that were older than me and think, fuck, they are so funny to me. They're, like, a lot of them were the epitome of comedy, and a lot of them are now dead.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's seriously, like, but I wasn't even thinking that at the time. I didn't think, oh, they'll all be dead. But I definitely thought, I don't want to become this embittered, one-dimensional shell of who I am now. And that's what was the most frightening to me about stand-up as an art form, is I feel like you push yourself to the extreme and become, like, more and more in this one-dimensional thing where it's like, well, you know, so-and-so wouldn't say something cute or silly on stage.
Right.
They would only say something embittered and enraged.
Yeah.
And then it's like, all of a sudden, if you have a cute or silly thought, I know so many comedians that have a very gruff stage persona that people love about them. And what I love about them on a personal level is how silly they can be, like, play like kids.
Yeah.
And they don't always, some of them do, but a lot of them don't bring it into their stand-up at all.
Yeah. It's like I just heard this weird saying, fame is a mask that destroys the face. And in the same way, comedians will put this fucking, like, man in the iron mask style act persona on that's an amplification of just one part of themselves, not everything that they are, but that's what works on stage. And it's like this thing gets locked to their fucking head, and they have to be that forever. That's scary, man.
Yeah.
Fuck that. You can't get out of it.
In some ways, that's what I think is cool about podcasts. Like, I think, you know, for me, I've enjoyed where I can go on Todd Glass's podcast and do, like, this QVC thing with him where I'm just doing that for a long time, being silly.
Yeah.
Or I can go on here and talk to you about life in deeper terms. And, like, you know, it actually kind of makes me feel more like, oh, okay, yeah, I can explore these parts of myself in a somewhat public way. And it's not going to be like... people seem to enjoy it, or there's an audience for it. You know?
People love it, I think. I think people, I was just thinking about this, how, like, there was a time when you could really fuck up your career by, like, saying one wrong thing as a performer. You could, like, announce, like, you even announced that you were gay, and it was, like, doom. Like,
but you know what's so weird is, like, I was, like, I'm always jumping ahead because I feel like I think I know where we're going.
Go.
But you're saying sort of, like, with podcasts and with Twitter and with all this stuff, like, but at the same time, you know, like, you could get in trouble less because everyone's saying stuff all the time.
Sure.
There's such quantity. But on the other hand, you have, like, the Daniel Tosh joke or all these, like, weird Laugh Factory incidences where people are offended by a joke or one word that someone uses or an offhanded remark, and it's like...
So it's more like the Gaff Factory than the Laugh Factory.
Oh, shit. Yeah. Oh, shit. High five. High five. 20-minute high five break, everybody.
No, I know what you mean, but those things are just like... Think of what that does for the performer. A good gaff gets you on CNN. Like, it only helps them. Like, everybody...
That's every comedian's dream.
Yeah. Everybody thinks that it's, like, terrible for Tosh or something when it's just, like, it just it's like putting more air into the fucking inner tube. It creates this, like, controversy and makes him... It almost raises him to this, like... revolutionary status.
But I don't know if that's true, because there was a whole like feminist organization that had booked out tons of his shows and they canceled everything.
Yeah, but he...
Just kidding.
Oh, okay. You got me. I might even think about it. Like, who the fuck is that organization? It's like this goddamn Nerve magazine. Like, these people, they pop up out of the woodwork and they suddenly seem like they've got some presence that they don't have at all. You get all these fucking paper tigers emerging from the internet that appear to be everything. Like, if you get 5 tweets from somebody, 5 trolls, then you can suddenly in your mind fall under the illusion that there's like this huge contingent of people who take issue with you when it's just 5 teenagers who know how to use Twitter. It's a big illusion that your mind begins to think that you really know what's happening out there when you don't know at all. And I think that the new, like, sort of where things are going is this: people are really attracted to realism for some reason. They want shit to be real. They, you know, like the acting styles in movies are real. Like, what's her name? The fucking, what's her name? You know what I'm talking about? Who walks around in her underwear in that movie, the Mumblecore movie she got really famous for?
Oh, I thought you were going to say the girl with the dragon tattoo.
You know, I like that movie, though. But even that kind of, if you look at, like, you know, where acting seems to be going, everything seems to be going to this kind of hyper-realism, I guess. People just want to feel more connected with the deeper levels of your personality than the surface levels. I've talked about this on here before. Like, I love The Daily Show, and I love Jon Stewart. Mm-hmm. It makes me laugh all the time, and I don't want this to come off as though I'm insulting him, because I understand why he's doing that persona. But what Jon Stewart's doing is definitely a persona.
Right, but it's like, it's sort of a satire of the news, right? So it's like he's doing a sort of a version of where he's making fun of the objective nature of the news. So,
yes, exactly. But it's still a persona, and he's and so when you see Louis C.K. on the show with him, who's like, even though like who's I'm sure that's still a persona, but it's based on more who he is. It's this contrast. It's this super extreme contrast between Stewart, who does kind of goofy facial expressions and like is kind of goofy and plasticky, and Louis C.K. is kind of dark and serious.
Right.
And it, I think Louis C.K. represents where things are going, and Jon Stewart seems to me to represent more where things have been, and which is this kind of like, you know, I don't know.
I don't know. They're so, I think that's kind of tricky though, because they're in totally different, like, it's, you're comparing someone hosting a talk show to someone as who's a comedian.
Yeah.
Like it's different. Like, if you were watching Jon Stewart's stand up and saying, this is what his stand up is like.
Right. You're right.
Like, it's, if you're hosting, you have a lot of objectives, like to keep the show moving, to present information, to, you know.
But why does hosting a show, why do you have to be a fucking a personality like that?
Well, I would argue in that case, it makes total sense. But I feel like if you're saying, like, it was.
Think of like Jay Leno.
An interesting question is, like, could there be a show in which, there's more of the personality? Although, think about like Conan. Didn't people always complain that he put too much of himself in interviews and stuff like that?
Who complained about that?
Some people. I don't know. I feel like I've heard that complaint before. I mean, I always liked him, and I always liked Letterman. And Letterman also kind of has his personality in there. And
I think it's jarring.
Curmudgeonly.
And not just fucking Letterman, Obama and Romney and anyone who gets in the public eye puts on this kind of weird, funny, plasticky thing where they stop being a person and turn into this other thing.
Can I just say again, like, stewards and stewardesses, or as we're supposed to call them now, flight attendants, or whatever the hell they want to be called.
Yeah, what do you call them?
Devils.
cloud devils.
Those people, what am I talking about?
Putting on a persona.
Yes. So, you know, I was thinking about this on a flight as they were droning. And moving your and if you open your thing and you buckle your seatbelt, lifting the thing. You're gonna blah, 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 blah. Windows are to your left. They talk like that. Like, you watch a girl who's like, okay, yes, there's your seat there. Thank you. Okay. Right. And she's like, your buckle is located to your left. It's like, why are you talking like that? Because it makes us like, okay, we're safe. But when they start doing their little hacky, corny jokes and trying to be one of us, I also hate that.
I hate that too.
So it's like, imagine if your news was delivered by someone, like, and also the newscasters. They, yes. A lot of them are now like trying to take little liberties and be like, oh, let me throw a little joke-a-rooney in there. And you're just like, ugh, you know. So I don't know. Yes, I think like the future is infinite and all kinds of cool shit could happen. But it is like, it can't be, maybe it can't be the same people.
Right. Well, yeah, a lot of those newscasters, you wouldn't want to hear what, you wouldn't want to see what they were like in real life anyway. A lot of those newscasters look like they just climbed out from under a hotel room bed after a night of sucking cock in Vegas, just covered in jizz and sick from meth. These fucking news, I don't know why they're giving these people jobs. They shouldn't be delivering news. I don't want, if my grandmother gets mauled by a pit bull, I do not want some painted harlot giving that news to the world.
Or go with it, lean into it.
Yeah.
Maybe you do want that. You gotta have a straight up prostitute to tell that to everyone.
Well, yeah, if we're gonna do it, go there. Go all
Dustin's
the way.
Dustin's grandmother's been attacked, all right, babe? You know what? I think that, like, the thing is like, those stewards, like, when they make their jokes, the stewardesses and the stewards, I feel like it's not fair. It's a double standard. It's like, we're not allowed to make jokes about terrorism in airports and stuff like that. It's like a federal offense, right?
Right.
You can't, as a passenger,
I don't know if it's a federal offense.
You can't go up to a steward and be like, ha-ha, I'm going to take this plane down. And they'll be like, no, it's a joke. Like, that's an actual offense. But those guys can literally, like, they'll be like, if you look to your left, the plane's going to tip over. Only joking, folks. I'm like, you should be fired on site. Like, you should be fired. An air marshal should tackle you.
Did someone say that on a flight?
Yes, I literally, there was this woman saying the most crazy dark stuff.
If you look to the left, the plane will tip over?
Yes, she was saying like crazy stuff like that. And I was like, someone needs to stop this woman.
What airline was this?
I can't remember. I wish I could. Let's just say United, because I hate them.
Oh,
or American. I honestly hate them all. Is there any good airlines?
Virgin.
Virgin. That's the only one people like now. It used to be JetBlue. And then literally they're like, we're going to tear up the carpeting. You have to pay if you want a piece of carpeting under your seat. If you want to turn on your reading light, then you're going to have to pay us $15 to turn on that reading light. Otherwise, you're free to squint. JetBlue. Thank you.
Yeah, it's so fucked up. It's like they listed every necessary component.
No, it's crazy.
I know. But I don't know, making shitty jokes. I just think that, like, there's a shift happening, it seems like, where people, it's getting harder to put on a thing. It's getting harder to put on a character without seeming completely retarded.
You know what's weird is, I think Moshe was just telling me he read some article about how irony was out and absurdism is in, which is kind of the opposite of what you're saying.
You talked about this to me.
Yeah, probably on the phone.
What article? Who said it?
I don't know.
Like, some guy announces it and it's real.
It was in Absurdist Monthly. Absurdists, I don't know, whatever. I've run out of steam.
Absurdist Monthly, you know, that, like, no, I don't know. I guess, like, I'm as guilty as whoever said that by making some statement, like, people are getting more into what's real. But I think that, you know, a lot of the success of podcasts, which definitely seem to be this new emergent form in the world of comedy or entertainment in general, the ones that seem to be doing pretty well, it's not like, it's just people, like, being normal and having conversations.
God. I just had the longest... I have such crazy conversations with you. Like, I just had, like, the longest thought while you were talking. My apologies.
Please, no problem.
Of, like, how I was like, you know, people always want to say, like, things are changing. Like, the end... Like, how long have people been, like, the end times are nigh, you know? And it's like, I always think about, like, the Middle Ages or the bubonic plague, how people were like, this is it. It's all over. And then everything just keeps going. And how, like, you think change is, like, everyone feared technology, every single technology, and I'm like, but things change so slowly if you really think about it. But then I was thinking about how people talk about how at the rate technology is being developed right now, how it's just getting, like, more exponentially faster and faster and faster, and how, like, if we're just doing these podcasts and this and that, and just, like, how by the time we're 80, you know, we're all gonna be just, like, holograms.
Right. Right. Well, it gets even weirder, Chelsea. And I forgive me, you guys, because I know I've talked about this before. I don't think Ferretti's heard this terrible theory. Oh, my God. This is where it gets even fucking weirder. It's not that we're going to be holograms. It's that we are holograms. It's
right now?
Simulation theory.
Shadows on the wall?
Yes.
Plato cooked that shit up years
Plato
ago.
Plato was a fucking... Plato is in a simulator. It's the idea is that... Based on the current rate of technological progression and the ability of computers to simulate reality, mostly in the form of video games, but also in like really high-tech supercomputers that can simulate weather patterns and stuff, you can analyze based on the acceleration of technology that within the next 20 years, like what I was telling you, they're probably going to be able to like scan. Basically, the idea is they slice your brain like a deli machine slicing meat, and then they take the neural pathways of that particular brain and recreate it in a computer and then bring that to life, and that brings that person to life in a simulator. So they're saying because that's probably going to happen, there's like a 30% chance that it already happened and that we are the simulation existing inside a machine right now. And it gets even weirder. There's a researcher, a theoretical physicist at the University of Maryland, who's been studying superstring theory, and I don't understand what that is, but basically he tried to make equations to represent the idea that we live in a supersymmetrical universe. And within those equations, he found the deepest level of the equations, series of ones and zeros, which are computer code. Inside the equations, he found computer code, which is called dual error correction code, which is a type of computer code invented in the 1940s that's still used in the internet today. So the what that means, or what people think it means, is that it seems to indicate that we are the very fabric of reality is composed of computer code, and that we are in a simulation. We're the simulation inside us.
What the hell does that mean? He found zeros and ones in the internet.
He found not on the internet.
In
the equations that he created to represent this high tech shit, which is called supersymmetry or string theory. Within these equations, within the deepest level of these equations, this is actually him in an interview with Neil deGrasse Tyson, who is
of deGrasse High.
Yeah, no, Neil
I love
deGrasse.
That book series.
He's talking to the author of that series. Anyway, I only say that because it's not coming from some guy at the freak out tent in Burning Man. It seems to be coming from a pretty respected...
Oh, sorry, I'm thinking of Sweet Valley High.
No, there's another DeGrasse High.
DeGrasse High was a TV thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Same crap.
Sweet Valley was the one I meant.
Anyway, the idea is that we are already in the fucking simulator. We are in the simulation.
I know, but that's like too hacky. That's like in every movie. Like
The Matrix.
And that garbage movie Inception.
Inception.
Right? Everything where people are laying comatose and their bodies
but
are doing
crazy here's
stuff.
Here's the difference between that and those awesome...
And if you made Inception, just kidding. It's a great movie.
It's a great... I mean, it's okay. But here's what... Here's where it gets fucking...
Did you like that movie, Donnie Darko?
I didn't like it. But I saw it, I saw it like years and years ago when the relationship was ending.
Oh.
You know, like a lot of... You should revisit movies and books that you were reading at the end of a relationship because you might find that they're really good and they just seem like shit because you were miserable.
I feel like at the end of relationships, I'm not like doing hobbies. I'm just laying around crying.
You try to distract yourself, though, right? There's like
no.
Stuff
I've never been like in a midst of a breakup and like I'm gonna start reading a book, a humor book.
I do. I try to, man. I try to like escape into I don't know.
Maybe movies.
You try to distract yourself.
A book is hard because your mind just like.
Yeah, that is a fun thing. Reading a fucking book when you're at the end of a relationship.
You're like, okay, I saw one word. Your mind is just that person,
the
that
worst.
Person. Their eyes, their lips,
the worst.
Their things they've said over the years, their eyes,
their lips,
their things they've said over the years, their eyes.
Do they still love me?
They love me?
Do they love me?
Are they gonna call? Are they gonna call?
Their
quiet.
Lips.
Their silence.
Their
silence.
Oh,
quiet.
Oh,
I miss you.
That's the mind. That fucking echo chamber of the mind, man. Oh. You understand it so well. You got a boyfriend right now?
No, I don't. I think Los Angeles is tough. Like, I just am like, I really do think I'm getting there. Like, I think soon I'm going to meet a cool person. And I have my fair share of, you know, dalliances and things. Sure. Very exciting, fun life. But I would love to, like, meet someone where I feel deeply bonded. I have so many great male friends, you know?
Yes.
And it's like...
Brendan Walsh.
Yeah.
Pete Holmes.
Yep.
Who else?
Joe Mandy. Nick Kroll.
Kroll is incredible.
You know, all kinds. But, you know, it's like when you bring other things into it, I choose, like, these people where you're just like... But, you know, I feel like I've made a lot of progress in the last few years towards, like, much cooler people and stuff like that. And I feel like, you know, I do feel optimistic. But I think L.A. is tricky. I think New York, I have more confidence that there's smart, cool, genuine people there. Right. Whereas I feel like everyone here, including myself, is a little bit garbage. Like, if you want to be in entertainment, which everyone in L.A. does,
yep.
You're a little part of you is pure garbage.
Oh my God! You think so? There's yes. No way out. What describe that? What is the garbage heap comprised of?
Because there is no one in entertainment who you have heard of that isn't self-promoting and with delusions of grandeur on some level.
It's like
it's narcissism.
No, my friend used to call it. Fuck! What's the name of it? It is narcissism. We had another way to describe it too. It's like,
and narcissists are cool. They're very entertaining people. They're very engaging yes. people, and there's incredible attributes about them, creative and all that stuff. But like, as a lover, as a long term consistent partner, I don't
forget
want
it.
A narcissist.
It's not gonna.
I
work.
Already battle my own narcissism. I would love it if I could, like, you know, meet someone who's just really. As cool as my friends.
What's your ideal boyfriend?
Well, it's like I instantly divide into a joke answer and like a real answer. It depends.
This is why I wish we had call-ins because people could vote.
Yeah,
answer.
You should have a poll system. I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. Like, I know there's different qualities I would like, you know, but I can't even imagine the person who would have them.
You wouldn't get bored with like a non-comedian boyfriend, like non-entertainer, without that like weird little.
I have so many friends, and I've heard this, you don't need from your partner every single thing you like in a person. Like, I can laugh my ass off with my friends. Like, when guys try to hit on me or flirt with me, they always try to be funny.
Yes.
You know, like overwrought emails and texts, and it's like, dude, I sit and hang around with the funniest fucking people all
yeah,
day long.
Work.
I'm not even seeking that, really,
yes.
in a guy. Like, it's cool if he's, like, funny in a civilian, like, just a regular person, how they have funny thoughts and stuff. But,
yeah.
like, I don't need someone who's doing, like, a setup and punchline in their date
blah,
request.
Blah.
You know
well,
what
guys
I mean?
Are nervous. I mean, God, guys are nervous. Like, think how,
yeah.
think how like, a guy who isn't a comic, think how nervous he would be to ask you out. Like, just to get your email would probably...
I know, but see, I hate that.
Would be freak
I
him
hate
out.
That because I hate to feel that someone would feel nervous around me. Like, I
yeah.
want someone who's just like, you know, like, for example, I feel like, you know, sometimes I have a problem where I say things rashly that I don't really mean. I would love to be with someone who's not like freaked out by that, you know, who's just like, that's kind of a shitty thing to say. And then I could be challenged to just grow and be like,
right.
oh, you're right. I really didn't mean that. And I'm sorry. And it's not like a 5-day fight.
Yes.
Like it is with someone who's really insecure or fragile.
Sure.
You know? And so, you know, I don't know. That's one thing I would like.
So someone, you're looking for like an older guy.
No, I didn't say that. I feel like I've always met lately in the last years, like people who are much younger, much older. Like I'm just
thinking stable, that level of stability, man.
But I feel like someone my age would be great, you know, like someone who maybe lives alone, kind of knows what they're doing in their career.
Yeah.
You know, like not like I think roommates is getting to be a bit much at this age.
Sure.
And I feel like, you know, someone who's like has no idea what they're doing in their career feels a little off, you know, just someone
spooky.
Who's,
that feels spooky because
yeah.
you don't know what's going to happen to them. You know,
yeah.
You could fall off the edge or something.
Someone who kind of knows what they're up to in life. You know, that would be great. And, you know, just someone who's kind of consistent and assumes the best of me. I think I can assume the best of people if, and it's, I think there's such thing in a relationship where it's a positive or a negative feedback loop. Like for example, with jealousy, I've dated very jealous people before.
Yes.
And I can get very jealous. But a lot of times those people are projecting their own like lack of trustworthiness on you. And like I've found that in the end with those kind of people, like, oh, you're completely shady. And that's why you're suspecting that my mind right. is like that. But then when I've dated people who give me the benefit of the doubt or who are much more generous in their appraisal of me, like I find, oh, yeah, I feel relaxed and I feel that way with you, too. You know,
right.
So I think that's important. And I also think the quality of trying to be a better person is important. I think some people are like, that's not an interest of theirs.
Yes.
You know, it's like, and I think that if you're someone who strives to do that, if you go to therapy or if you read books or you do things where you're like, oh, I could grow and change.
Yeah.
And that's interesting to you rather than like insulting, you know.
Yes.
That would be nice.
Oh, when people are freaked out by that, it's so such a bummer, man.
Yeah.
There's nothing to talk about at that point. It's like, oh, what do we talk about? You're scared of...
Yeah, but the thing is, it's tricky, and I always think about Patrice O'Neill's WTF interview with Marc Maron, where he's kind of talking about how women want a shark, like, you know, a nature parallel. Like, they want a shark, but they want to turn it into a fish, you know? And I do feel there's an element of that with me, where when I think intellectually, oh, okay, I'd like someone who's consistent, and I'd like someone who's this, and I'd like someone that... But it's like, then I'm also kind of drawn to like very alpha people who are kind of set in their ways and like all these things that don't really fit with that. But it's hard to sit down and describe the bullet points of a perfect person.
Because
it's
like, it never happens anyway that. When it happens, it just happens. Like all of a sudden it's in your life. It wasn't in your life. And then all of a sudden it's in your life. Like,
and I think it's also so much of what seems to make people connect is like the timing. Like when both people just have to be ready for and willing for the challenge of trying to relate to another person on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And, you know, also like, I think everyone has issues, but it comes down to like, are your issues compatible or do they trigger each other in this endless horrible loop?
Right.
So
no shit. Yeah. That's that. Cause you know what, man? Cause it seems like what you're talking about is super smart. Cause it's like the ideal thing is you find someone who's going to balance you out, you know? And, but something about being a performer, maybe having an addictive personality, you can get attracted to what amplifies your neurosis. That's what a lot of people are into. You start thinking that that's sexy, and it is. So how do you overcome that? Like, there's the logical brain that's like, here's what would be a really nice...
You know what? I think what happens, and I do genuinely feel this happening now, which is like, at a certain point, you've lived out the same like pattern with different people where it's like, what seems exciting almost doesn't anymore, where you're just like, oh, I can already see through this, like why this is exciting to me. And I've already cut myself off at the pass where I'm like, but it's not really, you know?
Sure.
I think like you start to be able to go, oh, I've experienced this. Like, you know, I don't know.
Like smelling tequila in the morning when you've been drinking it all night.
Yeah.
You're like, ugh. I'm not fucking doing that again.
Yeah,
just
like
not
when I was 13 or something, I vomited off of rum so hard, like just puking out of everything, just like, blah, you know, just like the worst like alcohol puking I've ever experienced. And I never really liked rum after that. And I think like, yeah, there is a parallel where it's like if you've dated enough of the same kind of guys, you know, like I joke about dating white rappers, which is something I did in, you know, my 20s, more early 20s. Like I think like, yeah, like you can do that enough to where it's like, yeah, you're not going to be like, oh, that would be really cool and exciting.
Oh, man, that's got to be a rough one. Dating white rappers, you got to go to white rapper shows.
Well, I'm saying this was like straight out of college. You know, that was something that like.
You got to go to all these fucking like late night.
You know what's weird is that I really do find, like, I grew up in Oakland, and, you know, I was co-parented by a black woman, which I talk about also in my stand-up. You know, I grew up with her from when I was one till when I left home, and you know, I grew up listening to, like...
What does that mean, co-parented?
Well, my dad was married to her.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So she raised me when I was there, but my parents were divorced, so I, you know...
I got it.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I never know how to say it. She was my stepmother.
Stepmom.
Yeah. So... It's like co-parented
makes me think for some reason that your parents were lesbians. When you say
right, well, it's funny because people say that, like, my partner, and straight people say that to be politically progressive or something. I guess co-parented sounds like that kind of a weird word where it's like sounds like it has some weird political charge to it or something.
Yeah,
but you know, and I grew up listening to music that it's like I just never at any point was I listening to bands. I was never listening to like heavy metal or, you know, Metallica or, you know. I didn't have a relationship to those kinds of music. And honestly, it's so weird, but I feel like music is so bonding, even though I'm not even that much in touch with what's good music anymore.
Yeah.
I just feel like I don't want to date someone where we never are on the same page with like, oh, I loved that song, you know, like, but I don't know. That's kind of problematic if what I listened to was, you know, Too Short and whatever. That was it. Toni Braxton, Too Short and Toni Braxton. The classic duo.
I don't know, it's rough being single out here, man. LA's being single's dangerous.
I know,
it's a dangerous situation to be single. I bet being single kills more people than smoking does. It's fucking
dangerous. Well, there's
dangerous.
All those kinds of studies in studies annually that say, you know, touch makes you more healthy and more mentally healthy. But, like, you can have lovers. I feel like, you know, it's cool to, like, see people and be realistic. Like, you know, I never used to think that was possible, but it is.
You can totally do that.
You can sleep with someone or you can hang out with someone in some moderated way.
Moderated by who?
Nerve.com.
Nerve.com will moderate your lovemaking from a webcam.
You know, I think you can do that. And if you're busy, that kind of stuff works out. But, you know, I don't know. I just want it to be a priority. I do want to be a person who believes in love and long term. You know, like my grandmother and my grandfather, who were married 50 years before he died. I mean, I fucking loved them.
Yeah.
Like they had a home together. Listen to this. He was a broke ass Italian immigrant. He worked his way up in real estate till he was able to build their dream house on a hill that they then moved into. She was a gardener. She did all these bonsais and flowers, and he did a vegetable garden. So their garden was like this symbiotic thing where, like, you know, he grew tomatoes, she grew roses, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it's like you could walk around there and see that they coexisted in this perfect kind of a way. And now, the problem is when you look at it on the ground level, like, she wouldn't even vote. She'd be like, well, he has my vote. You know, whoever he votes for, that's who I'll vote for. And she didn't have a job. You know, she was like a housewife.
Yeah.
And now she's like 90 and she's just like, I hated cooking. You know, she was the best cook I ever tasted in my life. So I don't know. Like, I can't fully translate it into like how my life will actually be. But I do want to believe that that kind of a union and companionship is possible and is satisfying.
I think it's possible.
Yeah.
But I think you got to work on yourself a lot. You know, I think that that kind of union only comes after a lot of inner work, and you got to like, really cleanse whatever like darkness is like getting in into the projector of your life, you know?
Right.
Because otherwise you're just going to see in every single person, you're not going to see who they are. You're going to see this like ghost of your mom or your dad kind of fucked up thing. That's not, they're just going to seem like this dangerous thing that's not even them anyway.
Yeah.
I just learned that at Agape this last Sunday. The church I went to, what did he say?
God.
He
said,
you know what he said? This is what he said. It's so brilliant. He said, the present is
a gift.
No! God damn it, Chelsea, let me say it.
The present is a gift.
Chelsea, let me say it. Come on. God, comedians, man. He said, now I can't even remember. He said, the present is the past. A lot of people aren't even seeing the present. I can't do it. He's so charismatic. Michael Beckwith is so great. Basically, he's saying a lot of people that think they're seeing the present. Don't look at me like that. People who think they're seeing the present are just seeing the past masquerading as the present.
Yes.
They're not even seeing the present moment. They're just seeing shit that's already happened.
Have you ever heard this? When it's hysterical, it's historical.
No.
Kind of Interesting, right? When you're having a hysterical reaction to something, an extreme
reaction. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's because it's historical.
I didn't mean when you said it at first, I thought you meant hysterical, funny. Like funny. Now I see, yeah.
Oh, comedians.
No, no. Anytime anyone starts talking about what someone at a church on Sunday said, it immediately opens them up for full-scale attacks. I understand. No.
I think you'll be speaking there in a matter of months.
Shit. No way. I can never speak there.
You totally could, dude.
No, they have people. It's a great church, but it is cheesy. But that's really true. It's like that's the thing where you walk around throughout the day and you have to really get very good at identifying how much of what you're seeing is what's happening in the present moment and how much of what you're seeing is preconditioned shit from your past.
See, what starts to happen to me is this separation between the intellectual and the emotional, where you start going, intellectually, I know I'm reacting to this because of the past, but you still feel those emotions. Yes. But I guess you're able to tamp it down because your mind is like, this isn't real.
What's better, man? What's better? Is it better to be like intellectually always looking in, or is it better to just let yourself go into that?
Well, that's the whole reason that someone famously once said, ignorance is bliss.
Right.
Like, sometimes you do look at people that just aren't doing this kind of talk that we're doing.
Yes.
And you think, oh.
They've done it.
Oh, God.
I know, man. Well, this is the thing. This is, you know, this guy I like to read, Chogyam Trumpa.
I just had that horrible hacky instinct to be like, bless you.
I wish you'd done that. That is not a hacky instinct.
Chunga chunga.
That is not.
Chunga chunga. Bless you.
That is a good instinct, Freddie. That is a good instinct. He says, in the beginning of his book on spirituality, he says, don't do it. He's like, don't get into this shit. Once you start down the path, you've got to go to the end.
Well, I guess that's what meditation is. You're not thinking, but you're kind of finding that zoned out feeling without zoning out in some sort of harmful way, right?
You're trying to go from baby state through the neurosis back to baby state.
Yeah.
But when you come back to baby state, you're not a baby, like an infantile muscle that's just reacting to the world, but you've actually like gone through an initiation where you're infinitely young, but you've like earned it in some way.
Do you meditate?
Yeah, I meditate. I chant. Nam-myoho Renge Kyo.
Oh, my stepmother used to do that. My black stepmother.
Really?
Yeah.
It's great. It's a fantastic form of meditation. Any kind of meditation is great, though. It anchors your day. Like when you.
And I always heard it. Because also my mom's friend did it. And there was a chant that sounds like San Jose lingerie, ding dong, ding dong, San Jose lingerie. Shout out to San Jose.
My puppet got stolen in San Jose. I'll never forgive those bastards.
You have a puppet?
I did. My puppet Little Hobo. I do a puppet at the end of my act sometimes.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, he got stolen. I got drunk in San Jose and left my...
See, now, whenever someone said they were drunk and something got stolen, I'm like, oh, you lost it.
That is so true. You're right. It didn't get stolen. I fucking lost that thing. It's true. I mean, I like the myth of the thing getting stolen. It's fun to say my puppet got stolen in San Jose.
Right.
It's a lot more fun than being like, I got drunk and lost a suitcase. God damn, Chelsea, this is hour flew by. You're on Twitter.
Yes.
Chelsea Peretti on Twitter.
Chelsea the Peretti. V for Vanessa.
You got any shows coming up?
I do. That's why I'm scrambling to pick up my phone because I don't memorize everything all
stop.
The time.
I'll press stop for a second. Hold on.
Okay, so this is how disorganized I am. The 27th of September, I'm in Columbia, South Carolina somewhere. And the 28th, I'm in Seattle, Washington somewhere. Now, October is interesting because, where is it? I'm in Arlington, Virginia on the 26th.
Arlington Draft
These are
House.
Just dates At and, the Arlington and Draft states. House? Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's probably the Arlington Draft House on the 26th of October. But what I was looking for was Tallahassee, Florida. I'm going to be there, and I don't see it on my calendar. Anyway, whatever. I'll figure it out. But I'll post it all on Twitter, Chelsea V. Peretti.
That's website?
One R and two T's. I also have a website and also have Facebook, you know.
All the links will be at DuncanTrussell.com. You guys.
Wait a minute. I'm Chel Sanity on Instagram.
Oh, man, no. Chel Sanity on Instagram. I got to get into Instagram. So, everyone, you might, if you've never seen Chelsea Peretti perform, you've got to see her perform. She's one of the funniest comics
working today.
And I really mean that. It's definitely worth buying a ticket to see her show because she's fucking great. And she's the type of comic where you remember her jokes. And that means a lot. Because a lot of comics, you don't remember their fucking jokes. You just know there was something that happened on stage and you leave.
Hey, but if you get to zone out and just chill during that time, that's cool too.
You won't zone out. You will be transfixed. She has an incredible stage presence. She's brilliantly funny. Go see her fucking shows. Thank you so much for being on the
podcast. Thanks for having me. That was so fun.
Okay, bye. Okay, this is one of my favorite songs ever. Always makes me tear up. Poncho and Lefty by Willie Nelson and Merle Haggard. By the album.
Living on the road, my friend, was gonna keep you free and clean. And now you wear your skin like iron, and your breath is hard as kerosene. You weren't your mama's only boy, but her favorite one, it seemed. She began to cry when you said goodbye. Sank into your dream. Poncho was a bandit boy. His horse was fast as polished steel. He wore his gun outside his pants for all the honest world to feel. Well, Poncho met his match, you know, on the deserts down in Mexico. Nobody heard his dying word. Oh, but that's the way it goes. All the Federalists say they could have had him any day. They only let him slip away out of kindness, I suppose. Lefty, he can't sing the blues all night long like he used to. But Dusty Poncho bit down south, ended up in Lefty's mouth. The day they laid poor Poncho low, Lefty split for Ohio, where he got the bread to go. Nobody knows. All the Federalists say they could have had him any day. We only let him slip away out of kindness, I suppose.
Is living in a cheap hotel. The desert's quiet, Cleveland's cold. So the story ends, we're told. Poncho needs your prayers, it's true. Save a few for Lefty too. He only did what he had to do. And now he's growing old.